Hello, welcome to the second episode of The Co-op, the official podcast of the New Pro-Life Movement. Here we discuss issues of life ethics, justice, human rights, feminism, and occasionally we go on tangential rants on art and culture. I am your co-host, Rebecca Bratton Weiss, and here with me is Matthew Tyson as well.
Hey, hello. We made it to episode two. So that's
with less drama this time.
Yeah, it's official now. Like it's more than just a one-off thing. We actually made it to a second episode, so I guess it's legit. It's legit now.
Yeah, we're for real.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Today's a rather sobering topic. Is probably one that's on everyone else's minds as well.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you agree?
It's
kind of what everyone's been talking about.
I think by the time most people are hearing this, well, I mean, it'll be probably a couple of days after the tragic shooting in Vegas. As we record this, we're only less than 24 hours since it actually happened. And there's a lot, obviously, as there usually is, there's a lot of discussion online and on news. And, of course, we're going to kind of take this episode to talk about gun violence in general, talk about, a little bit of what we know about Vegas, but more about, you know, really where whenever something like this happens, we always tend to have the same conversation over and over. And so we're just going to talk a little bit today about, you know, where the New Pro-Life Movement stands on gun violence, and then kind of like, you know, what can be done, if anything, what can actually be done about it.
Yeah, and this is one of the central pillars of our movement does have to do with gun violence, and not just in terms of mass shootings like what we've seen tragically today, but gun violence in general, which is why it's really always something we should be talking about.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's I think that's one of the things that, you know, I was really today talking about, was that whenever we have these mass shootings, and I hate to say, like, you know, hey, I hate to even say, like, whenever we have them, as is, because we've gotten so used to how often they happen. But whenever we have them, we always seem to reheat the debate about gun violence, and should we be, you know, doing more to restrict access to weapons or not? And, you know, it's the exact same. I mean, every single time, everybody sends their thoughts and prayers, mm-hmm. which I'm personally tired of hearing. And then we have this online debate for a few weeks. But the thing that, you know, we really want to talk about, you kind of use this opportunity to talk about, is that the real issue with gun violence, and that the reason this can be so frustrating, is because it is not at all, it's not just these mass shootings that happen. Gun violence is something that happens every single day, and something that affects hundreds, if not thousands, of Americans on a daily basis. And if it's, you know, it's not a mass shooting, but tomorrow someone, you know, is going to pick up a gun and they're going to commit suicide. There's going to be a domestic dispute and a spouse is going to pick up a gun and shoot their partner. Mm-hmm. Two kids are going to show up after school to settle some beef, and one of them is going to bring mm-hmm. a gun. A toddler is going to wander into their parents' bedroom and get a hold of a gun somehow and shoot, you know, his or herself or someone else in their family. Gun violence is something that is much, much more complex and is much more deeply rooted in our society than just these, unfortunately, frequent mass shootings. And that, you know, is a lot of what, when, as the New Pro-Life Movement is what we kind of, how we approach the issue of gun violence, because, you know, our very idea, under the very foundation of the right to life in general, the idea that we all have this inherent right to life, is a part of the reason that we have our sense on gun violence in the first place. Because you can't actually believe in the right to life and and think that only ends at birth. I mean, it has to extend, and you know, throughout someone's life. And the issues that we're having with gun violence in our country on every level, from the mass shootings down to the suicides and the domestic violence and the robberies, all of those things are part of a this problem, you know, with gun violence, that are robbing people of their right to life every single day.
Yeah, and I think I want to touch back quickly on one thing you mentioned, and that's the toddlers accidentally shooting people, which happens at a horrifying rate, and
ridiculous rate. Is
a reminder to us, yeah, that we're not just talking about this issue of a heart problem. We have this idea that gun violence only occurs because some criminal mastermind
right.
has been stockpiling guns and made this master plan, but so often it is just an accident. And so having that technology in your house, guns as technology, is not morally neutral. It's not a morally neutral fact. So, and there's other accidents too, you know, people who are cleaning their guns, who are not carrying their guns safely. So it's not enough to talk about changing people's hearts. We need to talk about gun culture as a technological phenomenon, which seems to be kind of particular to the American way, disturbing as that may be. And that's something, if I get a chance, I'd like to touch on that, and just our whole pop culture thing and how that's tied into American identity. But yeah, if we're going to approach this as a genuinely pro-life issue, we do need to look at both of those aspects. We need to look at what it is in our disposition that makes us not respect human life, and we have to look at how the tools that we own change us, what kind of capacities are given to us because we happen to own guns.
I don't think it's accurate to ever say that the whole trope of, you know, guns don't kill people kill people, or that, oh, it's just
right.
a heart issue. Well, I mean, if we're going to say that guns are, you know, if this, all this is a heart issue, then I see no reason, you know, to differentiate between guns and atomic weapons. And yet, when it comes to atomic weapons, mm-hmm. we are very intent on making sure that as few number of people have them as possible, because we know
right.
that one push of a button and you can annihilate millions of people in once. Well, you know, with one good semi-automatic rifle and a high-capacity clip, you can mow down a room full of people, whereas with a knife or a baseball bat, you just can't do that. I've said before, I much prefer my chances against somebody with a knife or a baseball bat than I do, you know, with an AR-15.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that it's dishonest. It's really honestly disingenuous to sit here and not recognize that the weapon itself does play a part in the severity of violence to a degree. I mean, when you have access to this high-powered weapon, you can wreak much more damage than you can with other things. And I don't think there's anything wrong, whether you're a Second Amendment supporter or not, with just acknowledging and starting from that fact.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is disingenuous, because if there really is no difference between a gun and a knife, then why do we give all of our soldiers guns? Why do we give policemen guns? And why do people who want to defend themselves want to have guns? You know, they're kind of undermining their whole argument that they need a gun for self-defense when they say that a knife is just as lethal. So, yeah, technology does change the way in which we interact with one another, and unfortunately today made that all too painfully evident. But, of course, there's this... to go back to the many things that get said, as Matthew said... We always say thoughts and prayers, and I've personally come to the point where I kind of am putting myself in a position of a person who's suffered violence, and I appreciate prayers, but what I would want more than that, or to make the prayers seem more fervent perhaps, would be to see that a person is actually acting to make a difference, that prayer in action, perhaps we could think of it.
Isn't that what Pope Francis said in the first place? Like,
yes, he did.
You pray for the poor, or pray for the hungry, and then you go feed the hungry. I mean, it's
right.
You know, we have a mind and body and soul and hands and feet for a reason. You know, we can't just sit back and keep sending our prayers to all these things and hoping that this problem will just magically make itself go away, you know? I mean, we act like if enough people, you know, if enough people just turn back to God, or if enough people just had this or that or whatever, 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 you know, then things are just going to magically get better. And I don't at all believe that that's how we're supposed to approach things, and I don't at all believe that's how God wants us to approach things. And so, I mean, we have, again, going, you can't deny the fact that we have a unique problem with gun violence in this country, and it is on the daily, robbing people of their right to life. And to not acknowledge that is to stay willfully ignorant of a major problem that is in dire need of attention. And so I guess to kind of sum all that talk up, you know, that is a lot of where our foundation as a movement kind of comes in, or kind of where we're starting from. I know it may seem very loose-leafed in a way, but it, you know, it's not enough to look at it as a black and white, should we take all the guns away or not. It's not a question of ownership or non-ownership, or the right to bear arms or not the right to bear arms. As we're going to discuss some more, we don't really care about necessarily taking your guns away, but there is a lot of area to move laterally here. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of latitude to work with, and we need to be working with it. That's all we're really saying.
Yeah, we need to really be thinking realistically about the options, and we need to have the conversations. And people may become uncomfortable with that, but I think, you know, our comfort level with the conversation is not as important as the actual right to life of the people who have been killed, and the people who are being killed over and over and over again. So, yeah, we're here to make you uncomfortable, folks. Enjoy.
That'll be fun. you know, honestly, though, like, this is one of those things where the conversation that needs to be had is so hard to have. Because nobody ever see, and I think this is a criticism for both the right and the left, honest to God, is that nobody seems to want to really sit down and actually have the conversation we need to have. Because when this happens, whenever these big issues happen, one of the issues that I do have with the left, one of the problems that I do wish that we could fix, is that while it's good for us to admonish people, you know, who allow this kind of thing to happen, we can't. I feel like we too easily, people on the left too easily move into sort of doing this sort of like I told you so kind of thing.
Right.
And they kind of move into this area of wanting to, you know, they just keep going back and throwing all the same arguments that we always throw out. And again, the outrage a lot of times seems to be very selective to these mass shootings. But then the other side, a lot of times the first thing you hear at past the thoughts and prayers is, oh, let's not politicize this right off the bat.
Yeah, which I got plenty of today, and I don't know. Did you get that also, Matthew?
It's
politicizing the tragedy.
Of course. I mean, it's the exact same. I mean, it's literally like I've gotten so. The thing is another sad, kind of sad comment. I've gotten so used to these mass shootings happening, but I've also gotten so used to the way that the conversation goes after the mass shooting. And it's like we've talked about already. Both sides have the desire. But yeah, I woke up this morning at like 6 o'clock. I woke up about 6 o'clock this morning and read the news and, you know, woke my wife up and said, hey, something terrible happened. And by the time I got to work, which was around 8:30, there were already flooded on Twitter and other places. Don't politicize the tragedy. Let's not politicize this shit yet. Blah, 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 blah. Liberals are going to try to take all your guns away already. You know, and that's always the first thing they want to say is let's not politicize the tragedy. And I don't know, that never really makes sense to me. What you mentioned something about that today on Facebook, Rebecca, that was good about...
Yeah, this is something I keep coming back to with... with this and, you know, with every shooting, the idea that the tragedy can be politicized suggests that it was somehow apolitical. And I can't think of many things that are more political, in a horrible sense, than a mass shooting, the killing of human beings in a public space. That is a political event. It's a public event that has to do with the way in which people interact. It has to do with shared ideology. It has to do with divisive ideology. It has to do with the politics that are already in place that have made guns available to so many people. You know, why we romanticize the gun is itself political. We have a Second Amendment that's political. So saying don't politicize the tragedy, it just doesn't make sense, because the tragedy is a political event and therefore it must be engaged with on a political level.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think even by saying don't politicize the event, you're already politicizing the event. Like it's
right.
Like everything,
yes.
Everything that happens in the public sphere is going to be political. Everything that happens in the public sphere is going to be political, because anytime, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, when it happens in the public sphere, when it happens to groups of people, large groups of people at one time, at some level, whether it's a local level or a federal level, at some level, the solution or the response to whatever that thing is going to come in the form of some type of legislation or some type of response from the people that make the laws. And so everything that happens is political. And when you're dealing with something like firearms, something that is so closely related to the Second Amendment in general, and so closely related to so many of the laws that we already have on the books, when somebody abuses that and murders multiple people at one time in a public setting, that in itself is already political. There's absolutely nothing you can do to not politicize it.
Yeah, and silencing our conversation, which seems to be what they're trying to do, is a very political act.
Absolutely.
And it's, you know, they're trying to use shame to make us not talk about it, as though our talking about it were somehow, you know, a form of disrespect to the people who have died. And this really bothers me too. And for years though, I bought into it. I was like, oh, you know, I must be silent, I can't say anything. And this morning I was like, wait, that's a terrible idea. Oh, and saying nothing when an injustice has happened is exactly what we're not supposed to do.
Exactly. I mean, we have an obligation. I mean, we have an obligation to. I think we have an obligation as citizens of a society, of a community, of a political entity. I think we have obligations to say when something like this happens to our fellow citizen, we have a duty and obligation to stand up and say, hey, we got to do something about this. We have to stop this from happening. These are our countrymen that are being killed day in and day out. We should do something about this. But at the same time, if you believe, if you call yourself pro-life and you believe in the right to life, then you absolutely have an obligation. You have a divine obligation to stand up to stuff like this day in and day out. Because, again, and I'll go as far as to say I have no intention of trying to... I have no desire to take people's guns away. I have no desire to repeal the Second Amendment. But I do truly, honestly believe that your God-given right to life is 1,000,000,000% more important than the Second Amendment any given day. It just is. The right to life is, if you call yourself pro-life and if you believe in the right to life, then it has to be more important than anything. Anything, including the Second Amendment.
Yeah, especially because this is me speaking more personally than as a representative of the new pro-life ethos. But personally and philosophically, I see the Second Amendment as something a right that human beings invented. It's not a natural right, because guns are a relatively recent invention. You know, it's not like all of these people prior to the existence of guns were horribly deprived to their right to own a firearm. Also, I was doing a little reading today, and we have this idea that back in ye olden days, everyone owned a gun. The American Revolution was fought by all of these armed men. And in reality, and if you think about just the difficulty that went into manufacturing and caring for a gun, most people didn't own firearms. And out west, in spite of what the movies tell us, most people weren't going around armed all the time. And in fact, there were fairly strict rules about gun ownership, because there kind of had to be. Because, you know, otherwise, when you've got all of these issues with ownership and you've got drunk people you know, what you don't want is to have a bunch of angry people carrying guns. Also, the guns weren't really that efficient. So, even if we're going to just look to our own tradition does not justify this mass arming of citizens with incredibly high-powered weaponry.
Looking back, you know, like you said, like looking back in time, and there's the argument to be made that, you know, when the Second Amendment was written, that, you know, we didn't, they didn't foresee, you know, the types of weaponry they could have at this point in time, and,
right.
You know, and you could, you know, people make the argument,
right.
That it's tied directly to the whole, you know, having a standing militia kind of thing, but, you know, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I really enjoy all those debates, and I really enjoy talking about the Second Amendment. And again, like I said, I really do believe that the right to life is infinitely more important than the Second Amendment. But at the end of the day, there's so much that we can do, I think, personally, that we can do to mm-hmm. try and curb gun violence without even having to get into really, like, Second Amendment
right.
territory. You know,
right.
like things that we could regulate and focus on that don't even necessarily have directly to do with the firearm itself. And for, you know, to go ahead and answer this question, because we get this all the time, I don't know the answer to gun violence completely. I don't know the answer. I think that there are plenty of countries out there that have shown that common sense gun regulation can work. Of course, there's also usually a lot of other laws in place that kind of feed off of that one. Mm-hmm. And I understand that America is in a bit of a, you know, our situation may be unique to other countries. But at the end of the day, I don't know. I honestly, God, I don't know what the answer is to really curbing gun violence, or at least doing our best to reduce it as much as possible. I have some things mm-hmm. I support, but at the end of the day, the biggest thing that I support and that we support as a movement is just doing something. Is getting outside
right.
of this cycle of mass shooting. You know, the same debate mm-hmm. over and over and over again, and then we don't actually do anything about it. That's really, I think, that would probably be one of the best ways to kind of sum up where we stand on the issue of gun violence. That it's absolutely a problem, and we need to do something about it. And that's kind of it.
Yeah, and I mean, once we start doing things, then, you know, we have so many systems of measuring efficiency in so many areas in our country. Why can we not apply it here? It's like we've just decided. In everything else, whether it's, you know, efficiency of production of sports equipment or efficiency of, you know, worker labor, we have all of these measures, but in this one area, apparently, we just can't do anything. Because, as you said, Matthew, people jump straight into this dichotomy. Like, you know, if we're doing anything, then obviously liberals are coming to steal your guns, which neither of us and the new pro-life movement. That's not what we're advocating at all.
And here's the thing, though. I you know, something that's interesting to me is that because when you start to wade into this territory, especially with other pro-life people, when you start to wade into this territory, there's always you can almost see it coming. You know where the conversation's going to go when it comes
yes.
to how this ties into abortion. And so the thing you a lot of the time I hear about is like, you know, or at least for us that we get tossed, that is how can you oppose how can you support, you know, restrictions on gun ownership, but then not as an anti-abortion movement want to focus your attention on going after legislation and Roe versus Wade? Like, how do you
right.
How do you rectify those two things?
Yeah, because, you know, it sounds like we're kind of, you know, speaking out of both sides of our mouths here, saying, oh, well, you know, we're only going to deal with abortion demand, but we definitely want to deal with gun supply. So what's the deal? Are we trying to be leftist hypocrites or something? And I think the reality is that gun supply is different from abortion supply. Abortion supply exists because of a demand that has always been there. It is a demand that is rooted in the way a woman experiences the world. And so, of course, abortions have been around for a long time. We've discussed this already. They're present in literature, you know, just about as far back as literature goes, because of the desperate woman, the woman who faces a crisis pregnancy and thinks, you know, how am I going to survive? Now, gun supply is very different. Gun supply exists as it does today, largely as a kind of self-perpetuating phenomenon. Like, okay, well, this guy has a weapon, so let's make a bigger weapon. This guy has a weapon now, so we got to get even bigger. The manufacturers want to make money, and so they create a sphere of demand, saying, you know, you need to have this. And if you look at gun magazines, it's always associated with your manliness. There's a whole phallic dimension there. you need to have this big gun. But then, if one guy has a big gun, then the other guy has to have an even bigger gun. So it's kind of it's a manufactured demand. And so if we could stop manufacturing the supply, we could also stop manufacturing the demand. This is different from abortion, because if we were to simply say, okay, boom, abortion is criminalized, that's it, all of these women who are in crisis pregnancies are going to be driven into an even more desperate situation. And that's what we don't want to do, because we do take an intersectional approach. And, you know, we recognize there's a prior injustice, and we want to deal with that. So, does that make sense to you, Matthew?
No, that makes sense. And I think, Tina, to kind of piggyback on that, I think, you know, I think you can also just look at some of the evidence that we have. Just in general, I mean, you look at, I mean, yeah, we talked about this a little bit in the last episode, and this is something important, because every time, you know, people who want to argue against gun laws will point to a stabbing in London or a terrorist bomb mm-hmm. going off in, you know, a country that has mm-hmm. high levels of gun violence or that, you know, has high gun restrictions, or you'll see that how like London has a high violent crime rate despite having high gun rates, and a lot of times this is usually sort of like misdirection in a lot of way, and I think a misunderstanding of what a lot of us talk about. As we talked about last episode, we realize that there's no way that we're ever going to be able to stop violence. Period. That's not something that we've ever claimed that we can do.
Yeah.
And you're never going to be able to stop gun violence completely either. Someone at some point, yes, if a bad guy really, really, really wants to go through the trouble, he will find a way to get himself a gun, fully automatic or banned gun or whatever. But that's not what this is about. The idea is that it's about looking at a problem and saying we need to do the best we can to reduce this problem. And so when it comes to that, I think when you look at what other countries have been able to implement as far as gun restrictions go, I think there's a lot of evidence to say that gun laws do mm-hmm. have a solid impact, a positive impact, on gun violence. Now, take that and look at it, approach it, you know, the same way with you do with abortion. I think that you can find evidence that shows that, yes, abortions do... Well, I mean, you're going to be able to show on paper that abortions do decrease with abortion laws, because if abortion is legal, then the legal abortions that are happening aren't going to get as, you know... The illegal abortions that are happening aren't going to be as well recorded as the legal abortions that are happening.
Right.
So, yes, absolutely. You can show on paper, make the numbers look like that. And, yes, perhaps you might even reduce the number of women that will go have an abortion because they didn't have access to it. But that is still, as I've said before, that is still not a pro-life win from the abortion side. Because if you have a woman who's in a crisis pregnancy, what have you done about the fact that even without access to abortion, she's still in a crisis pregnancy? And so we're talking about when you really break it down, you're talking about two very different things here, and they're not really in any way all that comparable.
No, completely different. And, you know, something I want to add to that is when we talk about the woman being in a crisis pregnancy, and that's a bad thing. It's not the pregnancy that's a bad thing. It's the crisis that's a bad thing. But if the only way she can get rid of the crisis is to get rid of the pregnancy, then that's kind of, this is one of the flaws of the pro-choice side, is that they've given her a choice, in quotation marks, but it's not much of a choice. So in a sense, in that area, what we would like to do would be to give women the option genuinely to choose life. Because just saying, choose life, that's, you know, I saw Life Chain in Pittsburgh on Sunday, and cynical me, you know, I did Life Chain several times many years ago, but I'm looking at them and I'm thinking, well, what difference would that make to me if I were in a crisis pregnancy right now? And so it's completely different from the gun situation. And yes, there may be situations where you think you need a gun to defend yourself, but if you're acquiring it in advance just because of some purely hypothetical situation where someone might break into your house and you might succeed at getting your gun in time, which you won't if it's locked up properly, most likely, you know, if you keep it under your pillow. So the hypothetical scenario in which your gun is going to save a life is, it just depends on a lot of ifs.
You are so, so not likely to actually be in a situation where someone is in your home and or wants to hurt you. Yes, it does happen, and yes, I understand the argument that, you know, you'd rather have it and not need it than, you know, need it and not have it. I get what you're coming from, but everything from stats and experience will tells us that you are much more likely to be harmed by a gun in your home by someone who lives in there with you. And the fact that we downplay that statistic, but we upplay the fact that, oh my God, you might need a gun someday, plays a lot into you know, where I think this issue of gun violence really comes from.
Yeah, and you know, and realistically, just the mechanic of self-defense with a gun, because I actually do own guns. I live in a rural area, and my husband uses them for hunting. I just do target practice because I think it's fun. And I say that because I want to add that this is not me as some kind of crazy liberal feminist gun-hating person wanting to take your guns away. This is me as a person who kind of grew up with a cowboy ethos and really enjoys having a revolver in my hand. But again, it's not about what I enjoy. If I thought that it was necessary for me to give up my guns in order to protect human life, that would be worth it. But I don't. But I also don't think that owning a gun is going to help me if someone breaks into my house. I actually have my grandfather's old World War II bayonet.
Nice.
Which I feel is going to be a lot less dangerous to have sitting around. We keep the guns locked up. So yeah, this just realistically, it's a fantasy that we have. It's a fantasy that's encouraged by the industry itself, and it's a dangerous one.
Very dangerous.
Because we're fantasizing about killing people.
I think it leads a lot to, and I really do think that that attitude towards it leads a lot to it. And so, I mean, I think that's whenever we talk about the issue of, you know, because whenever we talk about the issue of gun restriction, gun violence, all this kind of stuff, you inevitably get into the issue of, you know, well, what if I need a gun? I have a right. What about self-defense? You know, all these issues in which you might need a situation, you might need a gun, or then you talk about, you know, hunters or, you know, blah, 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 whatever. And yes, I think that there are plenty, again, I don't have an issue with those legitimate reasons to owning a gun, but when we're just talking about the conversation in general, we don't approach the conversation, I think, in a way that is, you know, ordered correctly in a moral sense. At the forefront of the conversation is always this fantasy of where you might need to defend yourself, and then this right that we invented to own guns. And we think about those two things prior to the very intrinsic, innate right to life, and that is the that is the problem, I think, with the conversation. But you know, when we get into conversations about the right to self-defense, we're we're not necessarily denying that. It's just that the right to self-defense, I think, has to be viewed in the context of the right to life and the reality of you needing to defend yourself and all other methods that are, you know, possible for you to defend yourself that don't always necessarily involve a gun. I think there's too much more of this conversation that we need to discuss. And again, really just kind of tie it all back in, that's really our biggest point as a movement, is that these are conversations we need to have, that we need to be proactive in some capacity.
So, I don't know, do you want to the basic measures that we think might help?
Yeah, I think that, we've talked a lot about our, what we believe in, but as far as, like, concrete things that I think we as a movement really, we put this on our website, and then, it's under our 11 pillars, as far as concrete things that we feel that, like, we can start moving towards right now that can help to start curbing gun violence. We believe in universal background checks. We believe in enforcing all enforcing all laws that we currently have on the books to the maximum degree. But universal background checks, outlawing online sales and private sales of guns. To make it more difficult for people to be able to sell without doing a background check or, sell to just anybody, banning large capacity clips and magazines or anything that allows you to pump, 50 to 100 bullets into a room full of people without stopping. We are opposed to open carry laws. We see absolutely no reason in that. And just with people just openly carrying guns all around all the time, it just doesn't seem like it's a safe environment. But overall, it's just not smart. If we want to talk about responsible gun ownership, it's just not smart or responsible to walk around with a rifle slung on your back. There's no reason for you to have to do that. It's not responsible and it's not smart. And so we oppose we support repealing open carry laws. We are in favor of restricting firearm ownership from people who are proven violent felons, suspected terrorists, or those that have a documented history of domestic violence. We do support greater care for the mentally ill. I think it's very ironic that you have a party of people in power right now who always want to point to how it's not an issue of the gun, it's an issue of people who are mentally sick and who need help, and then turn around and gut access to mental health and health care in the next breath, and it's ridiculous. And we are in favor of anything that encourages or mandates gun responsibility and safety. So mandatory licensing and safety training, and then some level of mandatory safe storage, which means that if you purchase a gun, you have to have a license for it. You have to take at least one safety training course, and you have to be able to prove in some way that you can store that gun safely. And then I also support harsher criminal penalties for people who don't follow these rules. If you, if accidents happens because you did not store your gun safely, or if you let your safety training expire, then you should face a criminal penalty for that, just in the same way that you do if you drive with an expired license, or if you drive drunk and crash into somebody. These should all be things that we take into account. And so that's where we stand, more and more concrete as a movement on the things that we feel like our legislators should be looking at. None of these things restrict your right to own a weapon, but they are all, we feel, responsible things that we can do, at least in the immediate, to at least try and curb the issue of gun violence in our country.
Absolutely.
Well, that is all the time that we have for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. Before we go, I do want to tell you, please consider becoming a premium member by doing for $9.99 a month. You can get all kind of great deals and discounts, and in the future, Rebecca and I are planning on being able to send some cool swag to our premium members. But above all, your contribution helps us grow our platform, helps us grow our show and get it out to more people, and you also just will be supporting a really great organization and platform, Breadbox Media, to begin with. So please consider becoming a premium member. You can find the information on our page on Breadbox Media, and just follow the instructions and register there. So thank you so much for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time. We'll be right back.
least